Hello, my fine friends, and welcome to another episode of Destination Discourse. I'm your host, Stuart Butler, joined as ever with Adam Stoker.
Stuart, how are you today?
I am excellent, although I got to say this might be the most controversial discourse in the history of the show, because I don't know if you can see behind our illustrious guest's head, there is something that is very offensive to me, and I equally have something behind my head on this side that's equally offensive. So I want to introduce our guest, and then we can get into the discourse of the most important discourse, which is obviously around football slash soccer. But welcome, Patrick Harrison from Tampa. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing great. Doing great. Good to be here. Good to see you both again. It's been a while.
Yeah,
you
so
too.
It has been a while. I know you guys have been through the ringer and you've been traveling a little bit too, but we're glad to have you on. And you are a special guest because you are the first member from the light side, from the DMO side, that's been on this show. So you're brave. You've always been a leader and a trailblazer in this industry, and trend continues on Destination Discourse.
So this could be the last episode of your show.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, this experiment could be failed after today.
Well,
who knows?
We'll see what the audience thinks of those tennis jerseys behind both of you, and if that I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
So Patrick was telling me before we came on that he usually has his screen around the other way, but he just deliberately turned it around to show off his Leeds jersey, which is behind. And for those listening, I have a Manchester United jersey behind mine. And anyone that knows anything about soccer knows that those two teams are mortal enemies. And so
it's kind of like the Cowboys and the Giants, or the Yankees and the Sox. It's kind of in that line. The other jersey is our new team, St. Pauli, the hippest team in the German Bundesliga, which is we just started working with this season and absolutely loving. And it ties back into what we're doing on this podcast.
Yeah, so good segue. We're going to be talking a little bit today about guerrilla marketing. This is something I know you're very familiar with, Patrick. You've done a lot of really cool, innovative, scrappy campaigns, and we're going to talk about that. But before we jump in, it's the moment everyone has been waiting for, the greatest segment in all of Destination Marketing. It is Stu's News. Jingle to come, maybe, Adam?
You know what? The jingle's having a resurgence here. I've been looking at LinkedIn, and the likes are creeping up there. I'm going to start adding them together. I think we'll get close to 100 here pretty soon.
Yeah, last I saw, you were in the 30s on one post, so you're probably you might win this one. We'll see. And I'll be in favor. If you get to those 100 likes, then
I just want the world to hear this jingle. It needs to get out.
I think you're overselling it personally, like kind of like I oversell this segment. So today's news comes from the Wall Street Journal. I'll put the link in the show notes. And it's an article from earlier this year, but it was a video that was put out by the city of Miami Beach that was saying we're going to break up with Spring Breakers. And it was very well done. I mean, the execution was excellent. It sort of played on the idea of when you break up with someone, you say, it's not you, it's me. But they did the flip. They said, it's not me, it's you. And really, this was a result of some of the antisocial behavior that happened last year, or earlier this year during spring break. And, you know, they're not the first destination to really target spring breakers as someone they don't want to come. But this is probably one of the most aggressive campaigns I've seen. And to be clear, this came out of the city, not out of the DMO. And I've seen some quotes from the DMO that basically says, yeah, we had nothing to do with this. But, you know, we support what the city's trying to do. And so, I don't know, I'll throw it to you guys. What, Patrick, first, like, what do you think about this? Obviously, you're from Florida. You probably were a little more intimately knowledgeable about this when it came out. And what are your thoughts on this campaign?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, we're probably the only place in Florida that's not a spring break destination. You know, Tampa is more of the hip urban downtown more than the beach area. But I've been in Florida for on and off the last 30 years. So, you know, there's been peaks and valleys with how people see spring break. You know, there's been this thing about people dying and falling off of apartments and hotels has been going on for as long as I can remember when I first moved here in the 80s. But I think actually, I thought the campaign was cleverly done. And one thing, you know, we're all about here is a Visit Tampa Bay is metrics. So the first thing I did when you sent this clip through this morning was go pull the STR numbers for March and April this year versus last year and see what comparisons Miami had with the surrounding counties. And just got to tell you that the results seem to have been positive. Miami, if you look at Miami, Fort Lauderdale, and the Palm Beaches, of the three, Miami was the only one whose occupancy went up in both months and whose revenue per available room went up. So, I
Wow.
guess it does fit in with them trying to get it more into that luxury type of marketplace. So,
Yeah.
I think it was ballsy, but I think it fit in with what they want to do.
Yeah, and look at you pulling data into this show. That's amazing, because usually we just talk a lot of
Yeah.
nonsense and pretend like we know
Oh,
what we're talking about.
that's the only real number I'm going to give you all day. Any other number I tell you right now is a lie. So,
We prefer opinion with no data to back it up, so that's really
oh,
a
okay. That's
curveball for the
right.
show.
You want to get
Say
into
anything
politics then,
confidently.
Adam? Yeah.
Yeah, say anything confidently, people will believe that it's true.
I
So, I mean,
agree.
we've seen that on the presidential trail over the last few months. So, but yeah, Adam, what's your take on this this campaign from
So
Miami?
I was really torn on it because I thought it was really well done. Like Patrick said, I thought the copywriting actually was really, really good in how it was worded and the messaging within it. I have a couple of issues that or maybe I should say questions that I think I would need answered before I could fully evaluate whether or not I like this or not. And number one, I don't like hearing that the DMO wasn't involved, because the DMO takes a holistic look at all the different audiences that come to the destination. And one of the things about being reactionary in a situation like that, if the city is trying to plug a hole in the dam, it's like that cartoon where you plug one hole and two more open up on the other side. I am pretty confident, and here's an opinion without data, Patrick, to stay with the theme of our show. I'm pretty confident that a lot of the people that come during spring break in their early years, even if it was unruly and they made bad decisions, it kind of lays the foundation for in their later years to return. And it is somewhat of a pipeline builder for the future visitation of the destination. So the question that I would ask is, what actions are we taking to plug the new hole of removing a segment of the pipeline that may someday show up as a family or a retiree or something like that later in life? And I would want to understand how that's being looked at holistically. And I hope it's not just, okay, let's run and plug this hole, and we're not taking the alternative measures to make sure we're not creating a gap in our visitation pipeline. I
Well,
think that's my main concern.
you're assuming that the spring breakers saw the Wall Street Journal or the campaign down in Miami, which,
Yeah.
I
Yeah,
think
I would agree with that.
it's really more targeted at people who aren't spring breakers to show them that they're being more welcomed. And I think you also have to take into account South Florida politics. And we have a lot of friends in the greater Miami CVB. They are involved with so many different cities and municipalities and political figures down there that that's not the easiest place to wrangle, the cattle at the best of times. And I think so long as this was done in, I say they don't know, they heard. I mean, I don't know. I know we know what's going on in our town most of the time. But I think as long as it was still, played in a positive way, I have no issue with it. I don't think it's going to destroy any pipeline at all.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think Patrick hit on something I wanted to touch on, which is I think the audience for this is interesting, right? Because we've talked about on this show before, folks like Barcelona that sort of did the finger wag at certain types of traveler.
Yeah.
And I think this was done in a really sort of cute way, right? It was kind of playful, kind of friendly, very much aimed at not offending people, but delivering a very clear message. But I agree with Patrick. If you look at the YouTube video has 400,000 views or something like that. Obviously, they've gotten a lot of earned media from the campaign, and that earned media primarily is going to hit folks that maybe traditionally have avoided Miami during spring break because of the antisocial behavior. And to Patrick's point, well, if the numbers are going to go up now, that means that families are probably traveling or couples are probably
For
traveling, and
older
so I think
couples, yeah.
that's a much better pipeline to nurture than college kids that may or may not come back there later, or may say, "Hey, that was my youth, but I'm not going to travel there with my family or whoever it is," you
Well,
know. So.
and the reality is for Florida, that January through May is our sweet spot. I mean,
Yeah.
that's when we really aren't filling the pipeline because, the rest of the country's looking to escape to sunshine, or at least in our case, east of the Mississippi is looking to escape to sunshine. So,
Yeah.
and especially, we're all in the state, I think not all is an overstatement, but generalization, but a lot of the major tourism areas, and especially in the cities, in the urban cores, are really trying to transition into much more of a higher end luxury, high yield visitor than we may have been 10, 20 years ago, when it was really just how many heads can you get in beds in a 2-star, hotel on the beach.
Yeah,
Yeah.
so trying to go from quantity to quality
Right.
holistically in Florida. Yeah, that's something I didn't have insight into. I still, based on what you guys are saying, I do have questions about the messaging then, because what they're doing is speaking as if they're talking to the spring breaker and hoping that the families or couples or other people glean from that that spring break isn't going to be a problem. And I wonder, I don't know. There's a little bit of confusion there, I think, from a messaging perspective.
Well, it depends on how they're leveraging the asset, right? So are they running, I don't know, are they running paid campaigns geographically targeted with this as a TV commercial? Probably not. It's a minute long spot, right? So was this a PR move, right? Was this a method to get earned media? Probably more likely to be,
Yeah.
right? And so I think
And if
that's
so,
it.
I
And
love that.
yeah. And
Yeah.
you could also look at it, was it more of a local advocacy piece from a
Yeah,
PR
right.
perspective of
Was it placating
you want to
the
show your
residents?
residents,
Yeah, great
because
point.
that's really in the end what our job is, right? Is to raise the living standards for your residents.
That's right. Improve the quality of life of your community. And so we talked about that on a couple of episodes ago with Amir Elon from Longwoods. So we agree. Well, I think this is a great example, though, of how you can tackle a problem head on in a positive way and have a positive outcome, without, like Barcelona has done, finger wagging and others that can maybe alienate people. And they're going to continue to enforce stricter rules. And I would say, from my experience, other destinations that have done this, Panama City Beach is another example. It's been really positive for that market. The void that lack of spring breakers creates has been more than filled up with higher value visits, folks that are going to travel more frequently to the destination, spend more money in the destination. And to Patrick's point, it's not about heads in beds, it's about quality of visit. And so
Well,
I think
going
this
back
is a
to,
positive move.
so if you look at March occupancy rates in the state of Florida, you're looking in the high 80s, right? There's not really a lot of room for growth, so the only way you can ch get growth is in the yield of those people, right? So it makes complete sense.
Yeah, agreed. All right. Well, good. Well, Stu's News lived up to its reputation as the greatest segment in all of destination marketing. But
I
let,
love your
let's.
modesty, Stuart. That's
I
just...
know. I know. Well, let's make
get
this the
used to it
greatest
after a
episode
while.
of the show. So let's talk about guerrilla marketing. So when we talk about guerrilla marketing, Patrick, how do you encompass that, or how do you describe that to folks that are not familiar with that?
Well, it's interesting, that one of the first books I ever really actually enjoyed, because I don't read a lot of these self-help business books. I find them, just circle jerks. But one of the first books I ever actually liked was in guerrilla marketing. And then I went back to Leeds to get my master's degree in the early 90s. My master's degree was in communications, but with an emphasis on propaganda. Right. So my emphasis has always been on how you can shake things up, how you can influence people, how you can do things in a different way, which is how I therefore perceive guerrilla marketing. Here at Visit Tampa Bay, when I joined 10 years ago, our budget compared to the other major Florida cities is a drop in the bucket. I mean, it still is. I mean, we for every dollar I get, Orlando gets three or four, St. Pete Clearwater gets two or three. So, we're playing with the big boys. So you've got to act big. You've got to act like the gorilla with a GORILLA at times, even though you don't have it. And that's I think where our skill set has been, and that's what I see as our guerrilla marketing.
Yeah, so we refer to it here as scrappy, you know, stuff that's a little bit non-traditional, you know, usually a little more grassrootsy stuff that's a little bit out there in terms of not being done
I can give
before.
you two examples I did in the first couple of months I was in this job. Number one
Sure.
is we took out an obituary in the Chicago Tribune, actually in the obituary pages for the passing of Winter, with a long poem saying in lieu of it ended with "In lieu of flowers, Winter says please go to Tampa, Florida," because that's where he wanted to go. And then I hired 20 actors, 30 actors, and we did street protests in Boston outside the train stations during commuter hours with big placards, people chanting, "Give spring a chance, down with winter, we want summer," you know, and chanting, you know, and it just to try and create some noise in
Yeah.
marketplaces.
So just talk through us through the camp those campaigns a little bit and what you saw from a result. I mean, obviously hard to
Can I
measure the
hear about
results of
the,
an
I want to hear
obituary,
about the
but
planning and brainstorming for that, because I've got to imagine those meetings were hysterical as you were coming up with some of those.
so Boston and Chicago are both big traditional marketplaces for us, and both of them had been flat for a couple of years, you know, because we have a lot of competition. You know, any place that has sunshine is competition. So really, it was a case of I wanted to create some impact similar to the Miami piece we just talked about. That was more about PR within the Boston marketplace. We actually ended up with news crews filming us outside of some of the train stations as the actors kind of blocked traffic and then marched down the main shopping areas. But no, it was really a case of, and we ended up with QR codes and giveaways. We gave away a vacation to Florida. We got a lot of, I say, a lot of press out of it. But the whole idea was at that stage was to be disruptive because we were getting swamped by messaging from others, and it was how do we make an impact? But I still actually have one of the photographs on my desk. It's just me in the freezing cold holding up a sign saying I'd rather be in Tampa.
That's amazing. Did you get any backlash from that protest? Was anyone?
No, actually, amazingly, none. You know, we still did ads in Boston for a while, and then when Tom Brady came down here to play for the Bucks for a couple of years, we actually saw a media clip on Boston TV of them wondering whether they'd come down because of the messaging we were running about sunshine and warm weather. So
Well,
I'm
that's
sure,
quite an ROI if it was
right?
true.
I'm sure the paycheck he was getting was much more the reason why he came, but you know, we'll take it.
Yeah. That's amazing. Now, how do you create like the environment within your organization to give the freedom for the team to come up with these kind of ideas and the permission to take these kind of risks?
I'm very lucky in that I have a CEO and a board who, you know, every time we as we continue to succeed, there's a free rein to keep pushing the envelope. You know, we've obviously not everything we've done has been a success, but enough of it
Oh, we're
has
going to talk
been.
about that in a second
Yeah,
too, some of the
I'm not
maybe
telling you
not so
about failures; they
successful.
never happen. But you know, there is that trust and that freedom, and I think, you know. And Stuart, you know this when you're working with a team, especially if they're younger staff members at a DM owner in marketing or PR or whatever, salespeople, it's about giving them some mentorship, giving them some encouragement, giving them the freedom to come up with ideas, knowing that some of them are not going to work. Some of them are going to be small, you know. But I look back to one of the things we did early on when I came here. We were known for franchise restaurants. I mean, this is where, you know, out where Bloomin' Brands is from, Outback and all of those guys. But we really wanted to elevate the food scene. So we started taking, from a PR perspective, taking chefs on the road with us to do live demos in New York and in Chicago, do stuff with media up there. Then we decided to do our own cookbook with just independent restaurants where they all gave us the recipes and we did this all in-house, but with a food stylist for photography. That then elevates, and you go a couple more years, and the Michelin Guide bangs on the door because they want to come and they see what the scene we're doing. Our second cookbook just came out. We've sold 10,000 copies of it within like 6 months, which is not bad considering you can only buy it online or in our store. But it's just like, so having that idea, now we have a food podcast. It's the culinary is elevated to such a level now that, puts us up there as a at the top of the food chain, pardon the pun, in like Florida culinary. That 10 years ago we were, a blooming onion or, fajitas.
I actually want to ask a follow-up question to that, because Stuart asked the question about how do you create an environment where these types of ideas are okay. Most people with a marketing education were taught there's a very specific process that you go through, and very few of those processes are centered around grassroots ideation, right? It's like, let's create a creative campaign, let's distribute it through paid media. That's kind of the formula that we're given. And then the other question, like this will tie into the question that I'm asking you. The biggest complaint I hear when I talk to destinations is bandwidth, is we've got a small team and there's not enough bandwidth. And so when you're doing these grassroots types of campaigns or the guerrilla campaigns, how do you get everyone on board with going outside their job description and doing something, maybe they're maybe they're protesters for a day. That wasn't necessarily in the job description when they got hired. So how do you foster an environment where those types of ideas are okay and shift kind of the indoctrinated thinking that happens in a lot of our early marketing education?
Well, those were a lot of questions piled on top of each other, Adam. Let me try and pick them
I
apart.
like to make it complicated.
And the bits that I miss, remind me of. So I think a lot of it goes back to it from a let's talk about it's easy just to put your money into a paid marketing campaign, use your agency record, throw that out there. We do that too. I mean, we have a great agency we've worked with for years now in FKQ advertising down here, do a great job. But we only have so many dollars. And as I've already said, Miami and Orlando and these others around us can outspend us so much. So you've got to find alternate avenues to do it. So you need to find innovative or scrappy or guerrilla or, ways of reaching out to folks. I think from an internal perspective, you build a team over time, right, that understands that they don't have a job responsibility. They have an overall responsibility, and we bring them in intentionally, bringing in different mindsets, different genders, different age groups, different everything, so that they can all provide different opinions within an open environment. I don't need 10 people agreeing with me. I need 10 people telling me how to either that idea is stupid or this will make it better, or for them to be able to leave their ego at the door. So if they come up with an idea, we could say, yeah, but that's great, but what if? And it's always that, but what if? And how can we improve, and what can we build upon something? And I think that type of thing, you get to a critical mass, and then everybody kind of jumps on board. And there are some that there are stragglers, and over time, some of those graduate to other positions in other companies. We have a conscious uncoupling, shall we say, right? To quote,
Wow, he is a marketer. I can tell you studied propaganda.
Well, you see, I don't have my background. I started as a journalist, then I went into public relations. That then fell because you're in Florida, obviously, into tourism, PR and activations and marketing, and then into this role overseeing, several agencies that we work with, plus our internal teams. So I think I would say I don't necessarily come from a traditional background. It's not like I did advertising where it's like talk about the campaigns. To me, the getting the right message and finding avenues to deliver that message to the right people is like the ultimate kick, right? We don't get the Sunday scaries here. We look forward to what's coming up on a Monday because we actually know that we can impact something, or we have, things that, even if they're tiny little throwaway ideas, like, we have our own beer now, or we have our own coffee, because Tampa has a long history of both brewing and coffee. So now we have our own brands out there that we sell and use as promotional pieces. It's really kind of brand extensions and elevating that.
And I agree 100% with what you said here. I think the team is critical, right? Hiring the right mentality, the people that have the right attitude and aptitude. Like we hire based on their attitude more than we hire on their experience. Like if two people come in and they're sort of they're the final candidates, and one's been in the DMO world or in marketing for 10 years, but one just has a positive outlook and is willing to try new things and is scrappy
Right.
and can learn quickly. We'll hire that person every time over the person with experience.
We've brought people in into entry-level positions, not into the position we know they're going to end in, not even maybe into the
Right.
department they're going to end up in, but we know that
Right.
person is going to be a positive addition to our team. So let's get them in, and as things change and move or other roles open up, because that you have natural movements in this business, is where do they my we have a graphic designer. Well, he's now he's creative director, but he started out as graphic designer and started out doing services, helping our convention teams fulfill, fill bags for trade shows. So, it's but the mindset was there and the innovative soul was there,
Yeah, and if you can create that culture, if you can have a team that can align behind a vision or an objective, a North Star, but is willing to disagree agreeably and willing to fight for what they believe in, but also get behind something that wasn't their idea, I think that's when the magic happens. And I think in my experience, the short time I've been in this industry, that the DMOs that are doing innovative, new, creative, successful things, they all have that mindset, right? It's not you're going to hire someone that's the media manager and all they do is focus on paid media, and someone else that's just focused on this. You sort of give them a purview, right? We call them the conductors of certain aspects of what we do, but we give them the freedom to intertwine and work with each other, and I think especially that mentality is important when you have a small team. I think if you try to pigeonhole someone into a specific role when you're a one or two or three person marketing team, it's almost impossible to be innovative and scrappy. And so those are the teams that can really benefit from the guerrilla tactics, because it doesn't necessarily take a lot of money or time to pull off some of these things. Like to put an obituary in a
I
newspaper,
love that.
it doesn't
And that
take
was
a lot of resources, right?
one of our PR guys who used to work for one of the newspapers here, was, I guess, a frustrated poet. So he
Yeah.
loved writing that piece. I mean, I think he and we won an award for it, and he got to go up and collect that award. And so,
Yeah.
to give somebody that affirmation that they can actually do something they love doing and be rewarded for it, I mean, how cool is that?
Yeah. Yeah. Are there any campaigns that you've seen other DMOs do that you're jealous of? You're like, man, I wish I'd thought of that, or wish we'd been able to do that first.
Yes. And sometimes not for a reason that I would steal.
Yeah.
I judge a few of the awards in our industry, and so I see a lot of what other people are doing, and a lot is variations on a theme. It kills me. My team will tell you all the time, I'm tearing print ads out of magazines. If it's a picture of an empty beach or an empty swimming pool or an empty restaurant or the roof of a hotel showing the HVAC system, I'm like, this person needs to be fired. This is just wrong. This is,
Yeah.
because it could be any beach, because it could be any hotel, it could
Correct.
be any pool. And obviously there's food poisoning in the hotel if the restaurant's empty. So it's that's but some of the stuff that's fun, I remember a couple of years ago, and I'll give a shout out to Seattle, known for their rain and everything. And they ran a whole campaign where they were activating a rain booth. So they were taking you
That's
around
right.
the country, and you could stand in there and it would rain on you, so
Yep.
you could feel like you were in
Yeah.
Seattle. And I thought, to take what's a negative perception of a city and to turn it into a positive
Lean in.
take on the road, I thought
Yeah.
that was so well done.
They did a good job, and they made it like a kissing thing too, right? Couples would
Yeah.
come and they'd kiss in the rain or whatever, and that it got the earned media from that was
Right.
tremendous. I mean, I know it came on everyone's radar when it came out. Everyone was talking about it. There was a lot of buzz around it, and certainly elevated the perception and the excitement around Seattle. So yeah,
Right.
I love
And
that one.
that's because, there's and from your position, Stuart, I mean, there are very few destinations that have something already iconic and positive built in. I mean, obviously Vegas has its thing, New York and the Big Apple, New Orleans being the Big Easy, which has both negative and positive connotations.
Yep.
But a lot of us don't have that. You can't
Yeah.
turn around and say we're the one thing, right? But so
Yeah.
that one thing happens to be negative. Yeah, lean in. Why not? I mean, obviously they also have coffee and grunge, and apparently now they're claiming to be the home of literature. But the
Yeah.
rain, I could definitely believe in.
Yeah, that one's a little stretch, but I'm open-minded, and I'd like to hear their argument for that. It's funny. So let's go back to something you were talking about earlier, the culinary scene. You guys have done a tremendous job getting recognized as a culinary destination for sure, and certainly stand out in the Florida market, which is crowded. But it seems to me like every destination that I've talked to, culinary is a pillar, right? They understand, people have come to understand that food drives tourism. And it drives high value tourism, right? The type of yielded tourism you were talking about earlier. So how do you continue to innovate and stand out in that cluttered environment, as everyone's now claiming to be, including Myrtle Beach, claiming to be a culinary destination?
Well, you're right. I mean, everybody has understood that is, after people book their hotel and their flights or whatever, that's the first thing they do is look at where they're going to eat. Eating is, and that's at any level, whether it's group of sandwiches on a beach or, white tablecloth fine dining, depending on your audience. What's been truly inspiring from our perspective has been the buy-in from the chefs and the independent restaurant groups here, because I think they understand that they had a very big role to play in supporting this. As I say, they were coming out on the road with us. They continue to innovate. They continue to host during the year hundreds of media and site visit folks that are coming in to look at conventions. But they're always pushing that envelope, because the downside for the existing ones is that now we have Michelin stars and now we're getting recognized, is all the chefs from New York and Chicago and other areas are coming down here and opening up establishments too. Not all can succeed. So you've got to, there's not just not enough mass. When I say that, we had 27 million visitors last year, so there's plenty of tables that are being reserved. But it does mean that they have to maintain a certain level and keep pushing it. We actually work with, and I mentioned we have a food podcast that we brought in to promote our latest cookbook, Tampa's Table 2, which is available on Shopify at visittampabay.com. The idea being that if we could, we brought in a host who works for one of the restaurant groups who used to be a food taster, so he knew their business better than we do, so he could get into the nitty-gritty, so he could get into the interest, so he could actually get them to tell stories, and like we're doing here, is to elevate what their industry does and where they can go. And so far, it just keeps on elevating. We just keep getting more and more folks coming to town. The Tampa Bay Times just released a list of top 25 restaurants in this area, which is not just Tampa, it's a whole DMA. And the top three happen to just be three of the greatest guys in the world who I've worked with for the last few years, and I was so happy to see them come out on top. And two of them have Michelin stars, and one of them is a Michelin Bib Gourmand, so hopefully a star for him
Wow.
this year.
Yeah. So I think you're touching on something that a lot of destinations understand, but some don't, right? Which is we as destination marketing organizations, or some people call it management, which I hate. I think you guys call it stewardship, right?
We call it leadership. We're a DLO, Destination
Okay.
Leadership
So you've evolved
Organization.
since last we talked. So a
Yeah.
DLO. So regardless of our role, one of our purviews is marketing and promotion, whether that's paid or earned or whatever. But a lot of DMOs stick to that, and they're just sort of shining a light on what the product is. But I do think increasingly we have to be the convener or the incubator for the product itself. Like, we don't manage it. That's why I don't like the management. But I think engaging the community, like you have with the culinary, is what helps to raise it, right? Because you can only promote what you have, and at some point you've got to get the community behind it. And I'd say we've done a good job of that with accessibility. We haven't quite gotten there yet with culinary, although we're working on it. But I think, to me, that's the key. If you really want to define your destination through a specific lens, whether it's culinary, accessibility, whatever, you cannot do it alone. You have to engage the entire community, and that nurtures itself, right? So once you've got a couple of chefs from New York or whoever that are now talking about it, that becomes more gravity that attracts other like-minded individuals, and it raises the bar. So the folks that maybe were settling at a certain level are now going to reach a little bit higher and try to outdo each other, and you sort of breed internal competition. So was that
Well,
deliberate strategy for you guys or from the beginning?
100% definitely. First of all, kudos on your accessible efforts because we're doing the same and it's a very valuable marketplace and it very much deserves the effort we're all giving to it. So, let's
For sure.
bring on that. Yeah, so you go back to control, right? We don't control anything. This is the only business in the world where I don't control the prices of anything. I can't tell a hotel what to charge. I can't tell a restaurant what to charge. I can't make the airfares. The airlines give discounts. So price is completely out of my control. And in Florida, we used to be, I think, seen as a more of a value destination, right? It was a spring break. It was a cheap family holiday. It is not anymore. Since COVID, Florida is not a value destination anywhere, especially when you get down, central and South Florida. It's pricey. So you really have to elevate the offerings. And that does go back to a very long-term plan we have had here forever. Our CEO talks about it's intentional, consistent, and ongoing. Those are his three words that he uses. Because we have 900 partners. They're the ones we need to engage with on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. And yeah, there are some that get a lot more attention than others, the big theme parks or the top restaurants or whatever. But it's important that we can engage all of them because they are our ambassadors. They are the first touch point when people come to the community. They are what people remember when they leave. Nobody gives a crap who Visit Tampa Bay is. They don't come here because of us. So it really is using is the wrong word. It really is engaging with all of those community stakeholders so that they understand what it is we're all trying to achieve, that they can understand if we bring a high yield visitor, that means that the Performing Arts Center can hire bigger and more expensive bands. It means the art museums can bring in, more exclusive traveling shows. It means, our parks can be taken care of better. It means our river walk is more beautified. So it really is it sounds like I'm going to start singing Kumbaya here, but it really is it has to be a whole community. And we've been super lucky. I've said this from the start. Before I worked here, I worked for an advertising and PR firm, and we represented a lot of other destinations or museums or airports or and it's very rare to find a community, especially one of this size. I mean, with a city, especially one of this size that understands that we're all pulling in the same direction and there is, the common good that we should all be working towards. And then that's probably why that we still get funded as well as we do, why we're still getting as many partners as we do, that we keep being asked to oversee other elements. I mean, we now oversee the advertising for the economic development folks. We do campaigns for anti-human trafficking, which is hugely important for our industry. Obviously, they don't have our logo on. We do work with the Protocol Office, the Friends of the Riverwalk, the Film Commission, the Sports Commission. We sublet office space to ESPN because we host bowl games here. So I think it's, and those things have all built up over time because it goes back to what you were saying before, Stuart. Boy, I sound like I'm on a soapbox here. Goes back to what you're saying. It's got to go beyond paid advertising and earned media. It's what can a leadership organization be? And we're so far off guerrilla marketing right now, but that's fine.
That's okay. We
Patrick,
meander on
that's,
this.
yeah, no, that I actually like that you kind of brought us back a little bit here because I think it's really important that we help the destinations that might be participating in this discussion by listening. I want them to understand, okay, if I want to do more of this type of marketing, how do I do it? And so how do you get your team to think of these unique ideas? And I thought maybe we'd give an example. Patrick, you have a beer, right, in your destination. Stuart and his team have launched a beer in their destination. And so if you guys were going to do some sort of guerrilla campaign around maybe a dueling beer taste test or
Dueling
something
beers,
like that.
we're not the only two destinations either, so we should just have a destination beer festival.
I mean,
There
you
you
don't have to
go.
do
I
paid advertising for that,
mean,
but you can come up with a pretty impressive grassroots campaign or guerrilla campaign that should get a lot of mileage. So how would you go about that?
Well, let me tell you why we did our beer, and I don't know why Stuart did his, but I'll tell you why we did ours. You know, years ago, everybody did ale trails and craft beer trails, and I think there's got to be about 100 destinations now do them. We did it from a different perspective of, you know, we're on the road a lot, we're hosting events in different towns and different cities or even different countries. So we worked with one of our breweries. They, in effect, they relabel one of their beers that is actually available in the UK and Germany and in other places among the country. So if we host events wherever it is, we can switch out the beer taps and it's got our beer's name on it. So we're pouring our beer at our event in whatever town it may be. And then we actually use them as giveaway items for, you know, conventions and stuff that come in. So it's really more now we're using it as a brand extension. Yeah, it goes back to, and we're going to get off to the topic already here, but it goes back to the idea of five senses, right? So we have our own, Tampa is home of the Cuban sandwich. We have our own food. We have our own beer. We have our own coffee. We now have our own signature scent that is pumped into this office and into our visitor center. And when we have big trade show booths or activations, we pump our scent into that just as a hotel would do. We sell that scent in the store. It's
How
really
would you describe that? Is it like a Drakkar Noir, or tell
oh
me?
no, it's a little classier than that, Adam. Gee, I hadn't heard that name in years until it popped up on SNL the other week. It is the whole idea was to try and bring in some of the citrus elements of Florida, plus some of the coffee, plus some of the rum we're known for from like Prohibition. So it's very much of a warm, oceany, citrusy southern scent. We call it Tampa Bay Sunrise.
Awesome.
How did you develop that? Like, what was the process? Did you go find a scent company to
We did. You know, again, we work with a lot of our hotels, and there's a couple of companies work, especially with the higher end hotels. Tampa Bay, the Tampa Edition, which was our first five star, always smells so good. And I'd said to the general manager, I said, "Who made this smell for you? Where do you get this from?" And we started working through, and it's just would be just like making a perfume. It was working through different elements of the scent, which ones fit, bringing in our entire office to give their feedback and which things they thought best fit into you know our brand. You know, you gotta look, our brand's a little different from most Florida destinations. We're not beach. We go back to like pirates and I think that's where a lot of our guerrilla stuff comes from too, is the pirates and the invading and the taking and the thing. So it
It's
was
on
just
brand.
something we could all get on board with.
Yeah, that's really neat. I hadn't heard any other destination. I've seen them do other stuff like paint colors and like things like that, but
Oh, we
you're
have
the first
nail
I've heard of
polish
Spencer.
colors. We have all that kind of stuff, you know. But when your colors are yellow and blue, that's not the best nail polish colors.
But you do something which I think is a signal that you're more likely to be successful than not all DMOs do. And that is when you're trying to do something new and innovative that you haven't done before. You don't go to your DMO agency and say, let's create a scent. You go find the expert that has done this stuff
Right.
before. You go partner with a brewery. You go partner with a scent maker. You know what you know and what you don't know, right? And you want to partner with an expert to be able to deliver the
Boy,
best product you can in that, whatever the idea is.
that's the crux right there of being good at as a CMO is knowing what you know and knowing what you don't know,
What you don't know,
right?
when to bring in the experts, right?
Right,
Surround
because
yourself
we
with the
can't
smart
fake
people.
this stuff. We're already juggling 100 balls. Bring in somebody who knows what they can bring to the table. You know, and sometimes they work better than others. You know, we've spun off candles and other things. We work with a coffee company because we have a long history of coffee roasting here. And the coffee's worked so well, they're now selling our brand coffee in their retail stores. So, again, a pirate theme, we call it Pirates Plunder. We make it with the local Blind Tiger coffee folks who, again, come on the road with us. If we're doing activations, they'll show up and pour free coffee for 1,000 consumers off their own dime. So, yeah.
So what I wanted to add, so you, the way you described the beer that you guys designed and the reason you did it, I think we're very much in alignment, right? It was used as a promotional tool for us. But we sort of laddering it up to a bigger strategy. We want to create a lifestyle brand in Myrtle Beach that's called Beach Easy, and we were looking at how can we begin to do that through different elements to touching the consumer. And one is apparel. We felt like beer was a good low-hanging fruit because it wasn't costly, right? We could just go partner with a brewery and they could handle the production and we can figure out the economics on the backside. So we didn't spend any money really, other than design money on the label to do that. But what we also wanted was a tool to obviously promote our beer scene. We know that travelers that drink beer tend to spend more. We know that they tend to be the type of demographics that we're looking at in terms of repeat visitation and expenditure and stuff like that. But we also wanted stuff that we can leverage from an earned media perspective, whether we're doing, a fam tour, whether we're pitching a story to someone else, like having those kind of assets that are just a little bit more interesting and a less pedestrian than the average destination has really helped us pique the interest of people. Like, oh, you have a beer, or oh, we're giving a gift bag to someone that's coming in, like a fam or something like that, and now they have this Myrtle Beach beer that they can take with them. And next phase is to get the beer distributed out of market, because right now we're just using it primarily in market when we go to shows outside of market. But our long-term goal is to really borrow a little bit of what Thailand did with their Thai restaurants all over the world, where it was really a promotion of the destination, and they felt like if people were more familiar with them as a culture, they'd travel more to Thailand. And obviously that's been a phenomenal success for them. So kind of like the Nashville chicken or other things, right? We want something that's Myrtle Beach to be able to go beyond the borders of Myrtle Beach and remind people of what Myrtle Beach is when they're in their homes, and something they can take with them too. So
That
we
whole
just,
idea of a lifestyle brand really does is really hitting the nail on the head. It goes back to even our paid advertising. I tell people, our ad agency, we're not selling a destination. I want our ads to look like we're a perfume. I want them to look like we're a luxury car. I want them to be that aspirational. I don't want to necessarily say sexy, but aspirational image that evokes an emotion in people and they create a connection with. And it's the same with, as you're talking with the products, and it then ties back to your local community. If your local community sees you're working with a local brewer, then somebody else is going to knock on your door and say, "Well, I make this," and then someone's going to say, "Well, I make this," and it's a way of bringing in. I mean, seriously, we have people who come to us all the time. They make leather goods. We have a restaurant here down the street where all the food it comes from. Within about 60 miles of here from all the farms and everything around here. So it's then working with those farmers and bringing them in and doing stuff with those. It's about really trying to create a person, the destination to be embodied by something, right?
We agree. I mean, we see a lot of our visitors. They're fanatical about this destination, and it's not a place, right? It's part of their DNA. It's part of their identity, and that's what we want to portray to more people. Like, we want to get them hooked by feeling something versus just, a lot of destinations, their promotions, their advertising is very transactional. It sort of sells specific assets in a transactional manner. And we fundamentally believe that if we move from transactional to emotional, we're going to have a longer term relationship with those individuals. And so,
You will never see us run anything on any platform that offers a discount or has a price attached to it.
Couldn't agree
The
more.
minute you do that, you're diving down and making your products a commodity.
Which is hard in the current environment after post-COVID, right? When value is something people are seeking, but you can't get into
Value
that.
isn't price, right? Value is in the eye of the beholder, and it doesn't have to be a 2-for-1 on sandwiches or anything else. It's got to be, they've got to see that what they're getting in return, which is one of the reasons we brought in a Riverwalk attractions pass. We have a bunch of small attractions on the Riverwalk here and a couple of large ones too. And a lot of them weren't seeing any business because they were small. So we got everyone to agree to a one like Riverwalk pass that you get to see all the attractions with. And that we use as a value added when we've got groups coming in or fans coming in. It's something that we can give them and reward them with that looks, or, you know, that it looks like $100 value, feels like $100 value, is costs us $20, but we never, but we never lead with the price. We lead with the package.
Right. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. So this has been a great conversation. I really appreciate it. Would love to have you back on and put other future topics for sure. I feel like
I need to still argue with you about your comment with Will Seckham that we copied sports marketing from
Do you want to set the record straight on that one?
I absolutely love what they did with Fulham, but we actually jumped in with working with Norwich City in England initially because of GDPR. We tore up our international databases. Where do you get an instant database? Well, you get it from the season ticket holders of a soccer team. So that was the rebirth of so kudos to Will for being first, but I will say we did it better. I love that's Will. Amazing. I love Will. If he sees this now, he's going to give me shit for that.
He's going
to
love it.
Wow. That's amazing. He's going to have to come back on and rebut. So final thoughts for you, Patrick, if you're talking to the destinations out there that are listening or watching this and want to give them advice about how to approach guerrilla marketing, like if they haven't considered that, if they're a little more traditional in their approach and they're eager to get into something that's a little more out there, a little more risky in terms of they haven't done it before, but you know, low lift maybe. How would you encourage them to get started thinking
that way? I would start small. You know, you don't have to have some like groundbreaking of piece overnight. Start small. Look at something that's authentic to your community. You know, whatever it may be, whether it's food, beer, whether it's beach, whether it, whatever it is, look into different ways you can take that to one of your target markets. I mean, another silly thing we did was instead of a snow globe, we did an inflatable globe where we had people laying out and sunbathing outside of an auto show in Detroit in January. It cost me $4,000, you know, but it's just a way of elevating that whole appearance you have. So whatever's authentic to you and whatever your target audience is, find a simple way to just think a little bit differently and encourage ideas from your team. Encourage ideas.
Yeah.
There are bad ideas. That whole idea, that whole phrase that there's no such thing as a bad idea is BS. There are terrible ideas. I come up with terrible ideas every day, but I think, you know, it's always a starting point. A bad idea can lead to a good idea.
Yeah, you have to wade through the bad ideas to get to the good ideas, right?
Yeah, and sometimes you bridge together two bad ideas and it makes a good idea. You
know? Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah. So it's worth the exercise.
And I would say, you know, I mean, you've got to have a hierarchy within your organization that has some level of trust and say to them, look, we're going to try this. We're going to try something small. It may not work, but we're just going to try and find other ways, especially because guerrilla marketing and earned media and so on, it can really extend your paid budgets. I mean, if you're like us, we probably get 10x on earned media than we do on what we can afford to pay. So, and if you're limited on your paid media budget, then you've got to find other avenues to stretch what it is you're trying to say.
Yeah, we're the same way. We probably spend, you know, 10% of our budget on earned media and activations, and we get 10 times the impressions than we do from the paid stuff.
And it's finding the right avenue. Like, we're going to sponsor the London Art Fair in January. The cost is minimal, but but London is a huge market for us because we have 2 daily flights now on BA and Virgin. The art visitor tends to spend more. They're more elevated, more luxury. We're going to be doing some activations in there with artists. It's just and it's in January when, as you know, London is not where you want to be. So it's just finding different ways to extend your brand.
Patrick and Stuart, this has been fantastic. I've got to run, but I'd love to have you back, Patrick.
Sure.
Yeah.
Anytime.
Adam, if they want to find you, where can they find you?
Yeah, catch me on LinkedIn or adam@relicagency.com. Thanks, everybody.
Great. And thanks, Adam. And Patrick, if they want to find you, where can they do that?
Oh, LinkedIn. Facebook, Blue Sky is my latest. I joined that this weekend to see how that one goes. Or pharrison@visittampabay.com. And if it's hate mail, it'll go straight to junk. So
Patrick, we appreciate you being on. You're welcome back anytime. Just let us know. And
this was fun, Stuart. We could have talked all morning.
Great. Well, everyone listening, we appreciate you. Please hit subscribe or leave a review. That helps people to find this show. And if you need to reach me, you can do it on LinkedIn or stuart.butler@visitmeltabeach. And until next time, this has been Destination Discourse. When we say it in the English accent, they think it's smarter than it really is.